Sergeant Morris, Real 4. You were saying that you could get supplies of superior civilian tinned food at Rangoon. Was that from the warehouses?
Yes, these warehouses had been stacked with all manner of civilian goods. The tinned vegetables and meats were of a far greater superiority to that which we had been used to. We were even able to procure such delicacies as tinned peaches and pears and pineapple, things we hadn't seen for years. And eventually, a lot of our desert rations were substituted by what was obtained from the food in these warehouses, and our Service Corps transport made good use of the improved rations and stood us in good stead later on in the campaign.
Who was actually in overall charge of doing this replenishing and loading and so on?
It was hard to explain. There was so much chaos on the docks that I believe higher authority just authorized local commanders or local officers to go ahead and make use of what food and equipment was available to make life for us a bit easier.
Who were you working for then? Who was giving you your direct orders?
Well, we worked on a regimental plan. Mm. When we were sent down to the docks, there was no individual actually supervising what we did. We were asked, if you need this and it's available, make use of it, because it was going to be destroyed in any case. I took the opportunity at this stage to obtain from a civilian store a wonderful canvas bedroll with light blankets, the kind that explorers use when they go on expeditions. I had misgivings about stealing this or procuring this, but I knew that if I hadn't have used it or made use of it, it was going to be destroyed anyway. And the other item I managed to obtain was an upright refrigerator. Now, this was an electrical refrigerator, but the purpose was not to use it as a refrigerator, but to stack it on one side of my lorry to keep our food clear of dust and flies, which it did most wonderfully. So I perhaps had the only refrigerated lorry in Burma at that stage, purely to keep our food clean and clear of dust.
What sort of uniform did you have at that stage? Had you been kitted out for Burma with the right sort of jungle greens?
This is rather a hard question. I can remember having khaki trousers and a shirt. I also had civilian shoes, black civilian shoes. I can't remember where I got them from, but they were issued. And because they were more comfortable than boots, that is what I chose to have. And a lot of my pals had the similar. We didn't have regular uniforms as such. We just wore khaki tops and bottoms. We didn't have any skeleton equipment other than a belt with revolver and ammunition, and a water bottle, perhaps. That's all the equipment we had. And of course, we had our rifles. Now, it might seem strange, but in those days, Sten guns or automatic weapons were in short supply. And I believe only the tank crews had the use of an automatic weapon, whereas we either carried revolvers or a rifle for personal protection.
Had you been trained to use the rifle?
Yes, we had had experience in rifle firing as part of our training, although we were more used to revolver. Being a tank crew, we were normally, or tank regiments members, we were normally encouraged to use revolvers, and we were in fact issued with a 3/8 revolver and a holster which held, I think, about 6 rounds spare.
When did you actually done this? Because, I mean, did you do weapon training when you were a band boy, or was it afterwards that you've been given basic weapon training?
No, when war was declared earlier, and before I joined the port workshops in Suez, we were encouraged to learn how to use these weapons. And in Cairo itself, in our barracks at Abusir, was a small range which we were encouraged to go along and to practice and to be able to use a revolver before we were issued with them. But having been issued with a revolver and being youngsters at heart, there was no check on the amount of live ammunition we could obtain or use, and consequently, amongst small groups of ourselves, we became Buffalo Bills, where we would set up a bottle or a tin at some 20 paces, and providing everywhere was clear, we used to take pot shots in order to improve our aim and the use of these revolvers.
What about the rifle? Did you where did you get that from?
Well, the rifles were issued to us at first. But then when we became more mobile on the vehicles, we were given or issued with a revolver ammunition. But a rifle was always kept on the vehicle in a clip. We had a clip which held a rifle and ammunition should we have needed it.
Did you ever fire a course of musketry on the rifle?
No, we didn't have any training as such. It was a case of necessity becoming the mother of invention. We knew that one day we might have to defend ourselves with these weapons, and we did take the odd opportunity to learn how to use them. But we received no formal training.
So the rifle, it was self-taught again?
Rifle was self-taught. Our ambition was to obtain the American...
The Thompson machine gun.
There were some of them around because these were earmarked for the China Lease Lend program. And there were supplies of them available from the docks. And eventually, although we saw people use them, they were very hard to come by. And of course, the ammunition to keep them supplied.
How long did this period go on then before you started doing other things, this period of unloading, preparing, and getting stores together?
From the time that we docked to the time that we were clear of the docks, it must have been about 3 days. By then, the tanks and the lorries and all the equipment had been offloaded from the docks. What equipment and stores and foodstuffs that were required and usable, we had obtained and removed. And the ordnance parties, and I believe marine parties, were then detailed to go around all these warehouses and vehicles and plane crates and oil derricks, and there was a systematic blowing up and demolition teams that proceeded to do this work. I believe, from all accounts, very efficiently, and little of use was left for the Japanese to use.
What were you doing in the meantime while you'd got a regimental base north of Rangoon, hadn't you?
We'd got to this regimental base. We were then quite busy making sure that our vehicles were worthy, roadworthy. We were issued with our various loads. For myself, I took on board about 15 huge 40-gallon drums of high-octane petrol. I carried a supply of oil. And various things to do with the maintenance of the fighting vehicles, whereas other people were loaded with ammunition or quartermaster stores. We were all fully laden and ready for whatever use we were put to.
And you were part of C Squadron with your...
My squadron
truck.
Was C Squadron, my brother's squadron, and we were handled by squadrons rather regimentally. Our colonel was a Colonel Congreve, a very popular colonel, and our sergeant major was Sergeant Major Paddy Clear, C-L-E-E-R, Paddy Clear, also a very popular man, and we were able to do our jobs as required from that stage.
Who was, I think you say that you were in the B echelon of the squadron. What is the role of the B echelon? What did it actually do?
Well, the B echelon is the non-fighting part of a squadron. The tanks were a separate entity where they were fully provisioned to patrol and to fight and to defend certain places, whereas the B echelon consisted of spare crewmen, people who might be required to replace an injured crew member. We carried all the quartermaster's stores, such as clothing, equipment, the lorries carried, like myself, petrol. We had ammunition supplies, and another one with quartermaster supplies, which carried spare wireless parts and the various items that the tanks would require in an emergency.
Roughly how many vehicles were there overall in C Squadron's B echelon?
If I remember correctly, there were about perhaps 6 to 8. It varied at time because sometimes we would either acquire a further vehicle which would be utilized, or we might have a vehicle that we might have had to dispose of because we couldn't get it repaired. So basically, the B echelon consisted of about perhaps 8 vehicles, which transported all these supplies. Plus, of course, we had a cook section. Cooks used to cook for the B echelon. We had a medical team, which supplied medicines and treatment for small outbreaks of illnesses. And we had various other vehicles doing jobs associated with the non-fighting part of the squadron.
Who was in charge of the B Echelon?
The B Echelon was run by the squadron sergeant, SQMS, the squadron sergeant major. Now, he was a WO2 rank, and of course, we had an officer in charge of the B Echelon, usually a second lieutenant, who saw to the fact that the replacement of supplies and the replenishment of the tanks went smoothly.
Who was the officer in charge at the beginning at Rangoon? Do you remember his name?
We had a Colonel Fosdick, who was our commanding officer.
But I'm thinking about the officer who ran the echelon when you were...
I can't remember the name of the officer because having just recently joined the regiment, I was not aware of who exactly was in charge, but it was usually a second lieutenant who I think perhaps they interchanged from time to time because running the echelon, although not too important, did require a lot of management, especially in a place like Burma where roads were non-existent, map references were difficult to find, and in fact communication between tanks and the B Echelon were very difficult owing to the terrain and the quality of the wireless equipment that we had. So although we had an officer there, his job was far from easy.
I was going to ask you about the roads and about the terrain in Burma generally, once you got outside Rangoon. What were the conditions like and the driving conditions and so on?
Well, Burma consists of very few main roads. And, of course, there were a network of passable tracks, hard mud tracks, which in good weather were quite usable, but at the onset of the rainy season, these were far from reliable. So being an armoured unit, an armoured brigade, we were held mainly to the main roads. And apart from the roads, the ground was littered with rice fields or paddy fields. And paddy fields consisted of large fields bounded by ridges, and water was fed into these paddy fields for the growing of the rice crop. So it was very difficult to cross paddy fields, either with a tank or impossible to motorized transport.
So you were confined to roads then. Were any of the roads surfaced or were they all unsurfaced?
A lot of the main roads were quite well metalled. The main roads leading or radiating from Rangoon and the various important parts of Burma like Pigu or Prom or Mektila or Mandalay. These were major cities or major centres. The road work to and from them was quite good. But out into the countryside, basically, roads were non-existent. And it was very difficult to move your replenishment teams across the country. And in some cases, quite impossible.
You mentioned that communication was difficult because of the wireless sets you had. What sets were there and how many? And
the tanks had a number 19 set produced by the Canadians and the British.
Yes.
This was a completely new wireless set to that which we had in Egypt. But it was quite an easy set to learn, quite reliable, and was used quite successfully most of the time. We also had bigger and more powerful sets in between regimental headquarters. I believe it was the number 52 set, between regimental headquarters and brigade. So the link between the tank troops to the squadron, squadron to regiment, and regiment to brigade was quite a secure telephone link.
What about you, though, in the echelon? What did you have?
We had a link with the echelon, which the sergeant major used to have operate. He had an operator purely for that purpose of passing the message to and from. For instance, whenever we had to find a rendezvous with the tanks, we would have to be in specific instructions of where to go and how to find it. But generally, the wireless sets amongst the infantry were pretty poor. Most of them had not been tropicalized, and the moment we had rainfall and hot weather, the normal wireless sets were practically useless. So the infantry used to have to contact us to pass our messages via the tank network back to their headquarters.
Was your wireless set in the echelon, did that work all right in damp weather?
We had our wireless repairmen, amongst others, and they carried one or two spare sets which were kept in good repair to replace dud tank sets. So our wireless and signals detachment played a very important part in keeping us in touch with, firstly, our squadron link, as well as to our regimental headquarters.
Who was it who would decide where you were going to put the RV? Would it be the squadron leader, or would it be done at regimental level?
Well, this, I believe, was done at squadron level. You see, the tanks never worked regimentally, because we were loaned out or sent to various sectors as squadrons and troops, or parts of a squadron. So depending on the day's activities and the amount of ammunition and petrol used, the squadron leader would say, I require replenishment to be made at a specific spot. And we would be therefore prepared to take our supply materials of petrol, food, ammunition to that one spot. We would go in a small convoy of perhaps four or five vehicles with a fitter or two and a wireless mechanic, a wireless technician, and perhaps a medical person. We would all go as a replenishment team to this one spot, and thereby meet the tanks. Fortunately, in most cases, we arrived on time and with the required need.
So would they, then they'd put in an order sometime earlier in the day, what they wanted?
We would be notified over the air that we'd had a big battle, perhaps, or we'd had casualties, and we wanted one or two crew members and perhaps a large replenishment request for ammunition, whether it be machine gun ammunition or the gun ammunition, or whatever what was required. This requirement would be sent from the squadron back to our echelon, and this would be prepared and brought up at the required time.
Usually, how long did you have between the request being put in and having to deliver it?
Well, I think the tanks used to make a request, usually lasting at night when they'd leaguered and they knew what they wanted for the next day.
Right.
And they would have to anticipate what would bring them up to strength. So we always made sure we had sufficient, even if it all was not used, we would have sufficient to replenish those tanks on the next meeting.
Where did you get the supplies from to take forward to the tanks?
We had a part of the B echelon, and the Sergeant Major in particular, had a link with the RA Service Corps supplies, where certain ammunition and fuel dumps were situated within Burma. Before the fighting actually reached this area, a great deal of preparation was made on supplying petrol, ammunition, dumps throughout Burma. And depending on where we were at any one particular time, we would know where to get our supplies from. And this was done by wireless, notifying us of a collection spot.
Did you have to go back then to get the supplies, or were they brought forward to you by the RAOC?
We had about 8 lorries in the squadron. We had 3 or 4 permanently replenishing the tanks, but the other lorries were used to obtain supplies as and when was needed. And this was picked up perhaps every 2 or 3 days. We would replenish our squadron stocks.
So you were effectively running your own small dump, weren't you?
We were picking up supplies and then we were forwarding the stuff as and when required to the tanks.
Did you do all the replenishment work at night, or did you ever have to do any in the daytime?
Now, that's a good question. Bearing in mind that any movement we made, and especially along some of the dusty tracks, usually indicated to the enemy that we were moving. And this would bring fighter planes buzzing around looking for these dust tracks. And of course, they would be machine gunned or strafed to prevent it happening. So majority of our work took place usually late in each day. We'd pick up our loads and make sure that we were hidden from the aircraft for a good part of the day. So most of the picking up and replenishment was done at night.
What did you do then during the daytime when you?
Well, during the daytime, firstly we'd have to locate the site that we were in. There were various jobs to be done. I mean, the cooks cooked what food we had, but somebody had to supply fatigued men to peel the potatoes, to fetch the water, to clean the dishes. There were lots of little jobs that the B echelon people were required to do during the day. And of course, it was necessary for them to rest, because if they were doing replenishment at night, very often we didn't return till near midnight.
How much sleep were you getting on average during the retirement?
Our retreat caused us a great lack of sleep, because apart from the physical requirements of picking up supplies and taking it to the tanks and returning, we had the great worry of being encircled. The Japanese would block off a road, thereby causing a roadblock. This would increase activity, and eventually the tanks and the artillery had to arrive to clear the roadblock. And at the back of our minds, as B echelon transport drivers, was this continual fear of being encircled or surrounded by Japanese with no hope of retreat. So we were never continually resting at ease. Although we slept and we worked, at the back of our mind was this continual fear of capture.
What arrangements did you make for sleeping? Did you have a bivouac?